Well, good morning. I do not have a handout. Thought it'd be kind of nice, but I don't know. Flying just doesn't seem to go well with bringing along a lot of paperwork. Effectively accommodating varying student ability. So what's your goal for your school? As far as the students go, you have the school set up. What's your goal as far as what you want to provide or produce in your school and your students? And where I'm going with that is, do we look at our schools as just providing the bare minimum, what we can get, just what we can get by with, how we can satisfy what the government asks of us and the state in which we are? Is that good enough? If so, we have more or less a secular viewpoint. It's actually a low value of education viewpoint. And we cease to see the children as individuals. And you can get too individualistic as well. But we just lump them all together and we hope they get a little bit as they go through our school. And I guess we just end up patting ourselves on the back at the end of the school time, or the children's time in school, and say, we got them through school. Wonderful. And I think about our churches then. And we have able brethren in many ways. They're able in many ways. But some of them struggle to speak. They struggle to study. They struggle to learn. And they are, again, they're able people. They can do many things. And yet they're afraid to function in our church, in our church services, because there's been a lack in their education. So, are we able then to take each child in our school? You know, the flip side of what I've been describing is that, are we able to take every child in our school and meet their individual needs? We will provide a school here that meets these children's needs one by one. Wow, that's a lofty aim. So what are your thoughts this morning? I'd prefer this to be a discussion rather than me trying to pull a lecture together. How are you and your schools? What are you doing to help each of the children meet their maximum potential? Anyone want to share on that?
Well, I think one place to start is to have teachers that really care about their children.
Okay.
And it's not just a job, and I'm here for as short a time as I need to be, and then I'm going to go, I got a side job, or they got to care, and each child they look at and they try to figure out ways to plant the seeds in their minds.
Okay, thank you. That's actually in my notes somewhere, just the word care, as we look at helping students. I was just asking the question, what are you doing in your schools to help each of your students reach their maximum potential? And brother explained that one of his thoughts would be that we need to have teachers that care. what is the way, or what is the curve, the natural bent, when we think on this subject, which kind of children in our school do we usually think, does our mind usually go to? Is it the gifted, or is it the struggler? Maybe you guys all think of the gifted. I tend to think of the struggling student and how we can meet the needs of that struggling student. But according to the blurb about my talk here, it's supposed to be for the others as well. And I think that a lot of our Christian schools do pretty well, or at least we make an attempt to help the struggling students, but we really don't do much to help the gifted ones. And I hate to use that word gifted because it makes it sound like a struggling student isn't gifted, and that's not true. That child is gifted, but in a different way. Maybe I should say students who work hard to get what they get done in school done, and those that find it so easy, and they always have spare time. What are some other things that you're doing to help your students find their potential?
In regards to that idea of the academic gift, we're trying to strengthen our curriculum to provide greater challenges and therefore greater achievement.
Okay.
For the ones that could slide through pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And without them really learning how to buckle down and how to study.
Okay. All right. Good point. I'm too old for Christian life for when I was in school. But we did change some curriculum back there. So my high school experience, maybe even my eighth grade, I'm not sure now, was ACE. And I'll just throw this out. The ACE is way too easy. For anyone that is average or above average, they can fly through it. I did ACE in a little over 2 years, my high school. And I don't know that I'm way above average. School is fairly easy for me, whatever. But it just went. Did I learn a lot? No, I didn't. And I look at some of the work that my high schoolers have to do now. I said, wow, I really needed that. I like the fact that I got done with high school so quickly, but I really needed that. The way we decide to do school makes a difference. And we are limited in the way we do school by a lot of factors. Part of it is the way the parents want to do school. And the parents and the school board working together. What type of school are you going to have? And for many of you, that is a classroom style. Understand what I'm saying there. That's where you have a group of children and the teacher has some sort of class with them on a certain subject, works through the work with them. They stay together in their grade. They are a class. And for many, many students, especially the slower students, that is a great aid to them in understanding the material. As they hear it from the teacher, as they interact with their classmates, there's a certain amount of learning process that is enhanced by that. But you also have on the other side what was introduced back there in the late 70s, early 80s, the idea of individualized training, where students were by themselves in their learning. If they failed something, they redid the book. They were in a grade by themselves, if you want to say it like that. Many of our schools tried that method and found it wanting. But It did offer to the academically gifted child an opportunity to excel and for the teacher to shovel more onto their plate if they needed that. So, there, as time went forward, a lot of our schools said, there's certain things about the individualized we like, and maybe none of you are like this, but in the areas that I do rep work, they said there's certain things that we like about that, but not everything. And so they started going back to classroom on math and language arts and reading, at least. And they may have switched completely back to a classroom setting. But in that way, then they said, for some of them, they said, we'll do individualized with some of the subjects and allow the children to go on, to go farther. And what happens in that situation? One of my nephew's daughters she's a very bright child. And she was in a setting where it was kind of half and half, especially as you got on up to high school. She would have been in fifth grade. And she was bored with school because she was gifted. And the binding of a class held her back. But Bible wasn't that way, even in that lower class setting. And so they left her go ahead with Bible. They said, you have to stay in everything else. So she surged ahead in her Bible. And when she was ready for sixth grade, she was already in like seventh grade Bible. But there's a flaw in that. She was not mature enough to really be doing seventh grade Bible material. It would have been better for her to have done more work or, you know, varying work more on her grade level. Now, she's part of the school where I teach. She's in a grade by herself. I said, you slow down on Bible. You're too far ahead already. But it's okay if you push ahead in math. It's okay if you push ahead in social studies. She was in sixth grade last year. And suddenly, school was interesting to her. I think she enjoys school. Can't really tell with her. But she's doing a lot better in school. She smiles a lot more. School's not boring like it was. But she's in a grade by herself. And what if I had three other students in that grade with her? What would I do then? Okay, anybody have thoughts and comments at this point?
I would just second your thought on if you're giving them more work to keep on their grade level.
Mm-hmm.
And something that we've actually done was use some of the books that Cam has printed, for example, the books probably Mark Cedar's book about Star, just
okay.
Having them do study those textbooks.
Okay. All right.
Those can be pretty across the board.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the child, I mean, most children can get pretty lost in those books pretty quickly. So, yeah. Well, as we think about meeting the needs in the classroom, let's talk about some different types of learners. And we'll start off with the slow learners, I think, first of all. And I just wrote down some types of slow learners. There's the unmotivated. Are they really a slow learner? Maybe not, but as far as the teacher is concerned, yeah, they are. they're always dragging the rest of the class down because they're not quite done with their work, their homework's behind. They're maybe goofing off in class and causing distractions for other students as well. How do we work with that child? And I'm not above using some extrinsic motivators, some things on the outside. especially for young ones. I have a second grader this year. He's new to our school. The school he came from, he was in a class of 11. He's now by himself. And his motivation levels are quite low. But a chocolate-covered peanut on the edge of my desk seems like it really does wonders. If I put it there and I say, okay, this has to be done, and you can have that. Do I want to continue that on all the way through? No, That's a bad idea. And if I ever hear him say, when I tell him to, and I give him an assignment, and I hear him say, what will you give me if I do that? I know I've done way too much extrinsic motivating. So, and one of the things I need to remember this morning is I'm talking more to school board than I am to teachers. I'm used to talking to teachers. You can probably figure that out. But, okay, these are things that you need to know, though, as school board in helping your teachers move forward. Rarely does a school year just go along like a breeze, and it's easy for your teachers. We struggle to find teachers. Maybe you don't, but we do. That's why I'm teaching again this year. And part of keeping those teachers is knowing how to help them conduct their classrooms so there's less stress on the teacher. It's just the way it is. And I know for you guys, those of you that are on the school board, there's some of you that have never taught school before. How many have taught school that are here? Oh, yeah. It's great you're on the school board. I just think that you don't need a school board full of ex-teachers. But I think it's good to have people who have taught before on the school board. I know it's all right for the wives to contribute there as well because they taught. That's fine. But I'd sure like to see somebody on the school board that has taught before. They have a much better inside knowledge of what's happened in their experience and how they can help that teacher. So one type of slow learner is the unmotivated. Another is easily distracted. He likes to do good work and things like that. But again, we need to, and if our teacher is talking about a student that is easily distracted, how do we as a board help them with that child? Maybe one thing we need to do is ask the teacher to look at his or her classroom. Is the classroom too busy? Is there too much stuff there? I have a student that can be very easily distracted. And his desk is in a row with the rest. He can see the board. He can actually look out a window in front of him, things like that. But I have warned him that if I have too much trouble with him being distracted, there's another desk that no one is using that's over here, and it faces the wall. It's flat into the wall. And he doesn't want to sit there. Partly it singles him out a little bit, but I said, okay, then you need to stay busy with your work. And that way I'm trying to change his ability there. Some of this, you know, I know our title is talking about student ability, but some of it comes from their behavior and poor habits that they've got in their life that keep them, keeps us from finding out what their true ability is. So, as board members and as teachers and all, as we look in these classrooms, there's things that we can do to get these children's real ability to shine forth. Another one I have, or type of slow learners, and I know the grammar isn't quite right on this, I just have eyes. Is there something wrong with this child's eyes? And I really became aware of that because I had he was a fifth grader last year, very unmotivated. I struggled with him all year long. Over the summer, he got glasses. There is day and night change in that child and doing his work and getting his work done. He marveled the other day. He says, it's 11:30 and I'm all done with my work. What shall I do now? This is a new problem. I said, I want you to work ahead in this and this and this. He's in a grade by himself, so I can do that again. Maybe I should tell you a little more about my teaching situation where I'm at right now. It's a very small school, and the room, I have all of the students in the afternoon, but in the morning, I have 7 students, and they're in 6 grades. So there's 2 fifth graders, but the rest of them are in a grade by themselves. That's nice, and it can be stressful, because I tell them, a whole bunch of them, get out your math books and get started, and then I'm trying to have math class with individuals as they need that and all. But it's just part of the way our school operates, the way we decided to make it operate. And see, back to you as school board members, is what kind of school are you proposing? Are you letting your teachers just decide how to, what format to follow? Or are you being active in being part of that decision? And that's not saying that our teachers shouldn't be part of that decision, or they shouldn't be able to give input. I think they should. I don't like the idea of teachers running the school board. That's cart before the horse type of thing. They should be able to give input. I'm thankful for the way our board operates. Last night, because of the time change and all, they were having a school board meeting back there. So from 4:30 to 5, I was on my phone having a school board meeting back home. And we teachers are part of that for the first part of the board meeting. And then we go home and they labor on. Anything from you? Any observations, questions, anything like that?
Do you have any directives for how to gauge when it's okay to single them out?
Okay.
Because sometimes you have varying ability, and yet different personalities can make that counterproductive to actually get really aggressive with changing the program for them, especially in a multi-student.
Right. They don't want to be singled out. They're pretty sensitive about
it. Not really, and yet, sometimes, especially older ones, they can actually really appreciate if it's done wisely.
Okay. You have an experience, or?
Well, I mean, I'm a teacher, I'm not a school board member, okay. So I'm asking it from that.
Yeah, okay.
But I've run into things, where I think, well, maybe something like this would help, but are the disadvantages of changing their program, if they go do that somewhere else, different than the rest of their grade, are you going to kill it, what you gained because of the...
Singling them out, you're
yeah.
saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I realize almost every situation is different, but I'm struggling to know what are some principles, or how do you help a student be okay with that, or...
Or the rest of you think? Can we single a certain child out? Does it always make them feel better if there's a buddy with them? But that's not always the way it is. Sometimes you have a class with average to above average students, and then there's this one struggling student here. And what are we going to do with that child?
My daughter is in a grade that has arranged 2 girls and a boy. And the boy is extremely sharp. It doesn't matter if you're talking Bible doctrine with him as a 14-year-old.
Okay.
same time, he is a sharp boy. My daughter is a typical girl. She is going to be a little, you know, when it comes to math, when it comes to just a lot of work. And we have a teacher this year that's Brandon. He's mature enough. He's very good example in the classroom, but not a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter is trying to figure out how to go through bookkeeping and, okay, you know, all these different things. And, you know, she can get cumbered down very quickly with the whole thing. And the previous 2 years, you know, in the upper room there, she had a very, very experienced teacher that stepped back last year. And she's trying to get used to this. And he would often tailor her work so that she could get it accomplished.
Okay.
Now, we're dealing with, we're not with CLE curriculum. Mm-hmm. There, it's run staff and mainly run staff, I guess. But he would tailor her workload for her. And the other students didn't seem to hold that. I haven't picked up that they've held that, you know, a resentment about that. He needs, the boy needs the work. The two girls are more on the same level.
Okay.
And they seem to be accepting of that. They went through school together.
Is that an eighth grade level then?
They're at ninth grade.
Ninth grade. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And there, the teacher had been, she finally was able to excel the last 2 years because she had a teacher that was able to own her workload to something that she could.
Was manageable.
She felt like she was giving
Okay, that's a point that, I mean, that brings out a point that I was thinking about a lot as I study for this, is that the farther up in the grades you go, I feel like the more you can tailor stuff to the needs of the child. I'm not sure how to do, I'm not sure what to tell you to do for, let's say, grades 1 through 6. But as you get farther, and I'll tell you a little experience of my own with my youngest daughter. All of my children read, and I think read pretty well. But some of them didn't do as well with subjects that involved reading in school. And my youngest daughter, social studies was a nightmare for her. She had some comprehension problems. Things did not work as well that way. And I was grateful that there were some teachers that said, Crystal, you don't do well with this. What can we do? I mean, the teachers asking themselves then, what can we do to help you through the upper grades? And there was things like, well, first of all, they said they found out she was good at math. So they said, would you want to do another math credit instead of a social studies credit? Now, if you're part of the Christian Light school program where we help keep your records and all, we're not going to let you do that. Personally, unless things change drastically, the school I'm part of is never going to be part of that. It's not that hard to keep records, and if somebody has an issue with it, I can help them figure out how to do that. But if you're your own school board and your own school and whatever, you can make your own decisions on what you want to do with credits. I'm not saying that you just do 15 credits and you're over with high school. High school is usually considered 22, 23 credits. But you can switch things around for those children. So they said, we'll drop one of your social studies credits if you'll take an extra math credit. And she finally said yes. So I guess what was required of her, she did Algebra 1, she did Algebra 2, but then she went to advanced mathematics. And when she got done with that, she said, Dad, this is the end. I can't go any farther than this. But she would rather do advanced mathematics than 11th grade social studies. And I'm helping some people with 11th grade social studies right now, and I understand kind of why. That's the old Alpha and Omega publication stuff, and it is, I think it's awful. But anyway, I'm not a good salesman for Christian Light, am I? And really, this class is not about Christian Light. Let's leave that out of it. But the other thing when she was doing the social studies, she still had to do 10th grade social studies, I think. And the teacher was scratching their head again on what to do about that. But she would fail book after book. Just not real bad, but just enough that, yeah, you have to do it over and stuff. And finally the teacher said, did some oral questioning to her about a certain book and found out that she had gained quite a bit by doing the book, but she failed the test. So here's something the teacher did. He said, Crystal, you do the test. Then any white space that's on the test, fill it in with anything you can remember from the book. Just start filling in random facts that you remember from the book. And I'll give it to that teacher. He spent probably hours double-checking to make sure but then she started passing tests. Now, she was still only maybe making an 85 or something like that, but it was what it took to help her go forward. And suddenly it was like, it wasn't like everybody's against me or that, you know, this is an insurmountable thing, but here is a teacher that is trying to help me overcome my deficit here. And all of a sudden it looks like it's possible. And she did graduate. There was a time when I didn't know. I didn't know if it was going to make it clear through. But, okay, more thoughts and ideas. Those are just some things I know from personal experience. That was as a parent, really. Yes?
One thing along with the story about your daughter and the baby, right? And I don't remember who impressed this on me early in my teaching, but God did not make all children the same.
Right.
And they all recognize that very easily on the playground. And yet, we tend to try to bring them back in the classroom and make them all perform exactly the same way, but we know that they don't. So I think we need a concept, that concept that God created everyone differently, and rather than that everyone has to complete X amount of books and so on to get through each grade, that the children, each of the students is working. Mm-hmm. And they're actually doing the best they can. And I tell my students at the beginning of each term that as a teacher, I reserve the right to assign one student more than another mm-hmm. to keep them working. And I have yet to observe my students they're being a resentment about that. Mm-hmm. But it's a good thing that they know who finds social studies easy.
Yeah.
And who doesn't. And if they see me making some concessions so that a student can pass. The ones who didn't have a problem passing didn't feel bad about that.
Yeah.
They want them to pass too. So.
I was afraid that my daughter would get a careless attitude about it if she realized that she didn't have to do
quite as much.
A lot of work. And I was also worried that it would, what would the other students, how would they feel about it her doing if they realized that she didn't have to. That has just not been an issue on either account.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She's been actually when she was able to start achieving, it motivated her and her driving improved, her attention at getting her work done improved. I didn't know that she could produce a paper of work that looked orderly and neat, and all of a sudden that was changed. So age factored into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Start taking more responsibility for herself and her life, but I've seen it go right along with her being able to achieve.
So. Yeah. There is something about achieving even a small amount that helps us believe, and I don't like to go into this thing about believing in myself and, those kinds of ideas, but it does something to build us up and help us. I think of the song, Each Victory Will Help You, Some Other to Win. I kind of go along that line, that as we can help a student succeed, you're doing a lot for the future. Maybe it's next year's teacher. Maybe you will not realize it in your classroom yet that year, but if you can help that child succeed, what will that do beyond that. And that's something as a teacher I keep in the back of my mind. If next year, Lord willing, we can find a teacher to replace me, I'm going to be back to visiting schools and putting more of my effort back into Christian Light again. And I, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about, what am I doing now that will help next year's teacher? How can I do that? And so, as board members, we need to think about those things too, is how can we help today's teacher prepare these students for, I don't want to say an easy time for the next teacher, but at least make it easier, that things work better. Some other things that you have to take into account is the child's background. What's happening at home? Sometimes you don't want to get involved, and I'm not saying we need to get deeply involved in the home, but sometimes knowing what's happening there can make a difference in how we react and how we work with that student. In our school settings, there's times that we allow some of the students to do less work. We're pretty adamant that they must do math, they must do language arts, and they must do reading. But beyond that, we want them to do Bible, we want them to do social studies, we want them to do science. But if a child is struggling mightily to get that much work done, has loads of homework all the time, as schools, we need to reevaluate that and say, what can we do for that person to help them? So, then I also say, okay, but here's this work. If he does get where he's above the struggling level, he's got some extra time, let him do a couple lessons in some of these other things. Don't feel like you have to do all 10 light units or the whole textbook of whatever curriculum you have. But find some interesting things, teach them to that child, and help them. School should be an enjoyable thing. And one of the things about those that do well in school, I think they need more work, but they can also have the mentality or thought in their mind that if I do too well in school, the teacher's just going to load me down. Worksheets. That's what we do sometimes. Just give them some more worksheets. That kills initiative. There ought to be something a little more interesting to whet their appetite. I like what Jonah said about the those interesting, I call them coffee table books, that just piles of information in there. Maybe have some encyclopedia you need to have a list and say, you need to look this up in the encyclopedia. I want you to read it. And then I want a small report. Maybe you can just do it orally in front of the class. What did you learn from that? To some students, that might be a little boring too, but other students would find that very interesting. And we all know what we've done with an encyclopedia. You don't just go to that article. There's an interesting picture. What does it mean about, and before long, you spent a half an hour pouring knowledge into the old mind, and that's good. Okay, we've talked a fair amount about the struggling. And we've talked some about those who do better. Are there more ideas and thoughts for those that find school easy? What are you doing for those? And maybe you want to go back to talking about strugglers. I'm fine with that. We've I just got the 5-minute signal back there.
Sometimes I think we miss the fact that the fast ones often want to help the slower ones.
Okay.
And it's okay to let that happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the ways that we have begun doing that is allowing students to do subjects like social studies and science and study groups rather than individually.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where they're allowed to talk about the text. And we basically use our test grades to decide whether that's worth it, so that the test individually.
Okay.
And so far, across the board, the test grades have been higher.
Okay.
For all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's has been an enjoyable way for them to. The fast ones and the slow ones sitting around the table together, talking about the same things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as a teacher, it's your responsibility then to make sure that the slow ones aren't just sitting there doing nothing and the fast ones are doing all the work either. I do that some. I'm always worried about noise in the classroom at that point, but I'm willing to trade off some of the quietness for a little bit of noise so that the end result, I still look at the end result on something like that and try to decide, you know, what the trade-off is.
I know in the situation we have there, we got there's one family there, and all their students they're very sharp. Those students have been able to help with the down boy that's in the school there. They've also been able to help with the younger students. And like you mentioned, my daughter has benefited a lot from that classmate of hers that's been explaining those problems that the teacher actually hasn't been, either from inexperience or not sure, you know, how to do it herself. Relying on that fellow student has actually been able to help her understand the concept. And some of that may be because he already knows what she's struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
He knows her well enough. He knows what she's going to trip up.
Okay.
And, you know, as long as that's kept, you know, under the, you know, in the right, you know,
supervision.
Currently it's been working well.
I remember something that happened. I was teaching grades 5, 6, and 7 at the time, I think, and I was having math class one day. And I know this happened to me multiple times, and it was hard on my pride. But I was teaching math class, and I was just looking at the class, and there was about two of them. I'm supposing there was 6 in the class. Two of them, I could see they got it, and the other 4, uh-uh. And immediately, my mind twirls at a high rate of speed at that point. You know, and I've got to figure out another way to explain this. But I was a little bit at a loss, and I stopped for just a little bit. One of those that understood it raised their hand, and I said, I acknowledged them, and they said, "Well, this is the way I do it." And all of a sudden, I seen light bulbs popping on, and I thought, "Okay, I'm just going to stand back here and let this boy teach the class for a little bit." I mean, I'm supposed to be the teacher, but if he can make it plain to his classmates because he saw a little bit different, I shouldn't let my foolish pride stand in the way of that happening. So, you know, that was a good experience for me. And there were times after that I sought out those that I was pretty sure were getting it and saying, "Well, how do you, is there something that I'm missing here?" And they were always pretty kind to me as a teacher. So, well, this is kind of how I think about it, or I do it, and it's usually math. It's almost always math. But I appreciate that. And again, it's classmates helping classmates. And I don't know. There's something about that that seems to make a connection. So,
just along with that, I do think that's a good life skill. Because when they get out of school, many of the problems we face are faced with other people.
Yeah. Okay.
And learning that dynamic is beyond.
Yep. Well, thanks for your help. I thought I had lots of time, but we basically covered a lot of the subjects that I wanted to. So, thank you for your participation. You are dismissed.